There is a Gemara Maseches Kiddushin Daf Nun Tes, which is a pretty well-known Gemara, about the story of Anei HaMahapech Becharara. So what does it mean? The Gemara tells us a story about one of the Amoraim, Rab Abba, that got involved in a business deal that someone else, one of his friends, was already involved in. So Rav Gidl, his friend, was negotiating on a piece of property, and he was about to buy it, and all of a sudden, in comes Rab Abba, and he starts to negotiate with the people who were selling, and after all is said and done, Rab Abba ends up with a piece of property. So this obviously made Rav Gidl feel very uncomfortable. And the story comes to one of their teachers, Rav Yitzchak Nafcha. He calls in Rab Abba into the office. He says, let me ask you a question. Let's say there was a poor man who was mahapech becharara. Let's say there was an ania mahapech becharara, which means he's sitting there. He doesn't have a lot. He doesn't have much to his name. And he's sitting there flipping a pancake or something that belongs to him, rightfully so. And now somebody comes and tries to snatch it away from him. So what would you call that person who comes and takes it away from the poor man? So Rab Abba himself says, that would be terrible. We would say that he's Nikra Rasha. You are an evil person. What do you mean? This man is sitting there, he finally found something to eat, and now you snap it, you take it away from him right under his nose. How can you do such a thing? So he says, well then how can you do what you just did to your friend? He was sitting and negotiating over the piece of property. You decided to come behind his back and negotiate a higher bid, and now you bought the house, you bought the property that you knew he was interested in buying. How can you do such a thing? So the Gemara says that Rab Abba confesses and he says, I had no idea that someone else was looking at it. I thought it was up for the market. I didn't realize that somebody was already in a contract over it. And they get into a whole discussion and he feels terrible. He goes to his friend. He talks to him about it. And the friend says, I don't want to take it from you. He says, I don't want to have it myself. And it turns out that piece of property ended up being no one's. So they called it the Ara de Rabban, and they called it, this is the land of the rabbis, because the two rabbis, each one is such a big tzaddik, nobody wants to take it, nobody wants to give it. And that's the way it ended up. That's the story, the famous story of the Anei HaMahapech Becharara. So this is a very important Gemara, but the Gemara does not say that if one does such an act, we're told he's called a Rasha. Very nice, so you get called a Rasha. What does it mean that you're called a Rasha? So some Rishonim understand that it means, not only are you called a Rasha, but Rabbeinu Tam says, Bez Din Mechayivim Oso LaHachzir Es HaKesef. Bez Din makes you give back all the money. Bez Din makes you go back on the deal that you were involved in and undo all the mess that you created. However, most of the Rishonim don't assume like that. Most of the Rishonim mean, we're dealing here with an issue that is an unethical person. So we're going to get up in shul and we're going to call you a Rasha. We're going to make an announcement at the end of davening every day. We want everybody to know this person was involved in something that was less than honest, and he did something that was not really above board, and he shouldn't have done this, and he's a Rasha, and because of that, he's Pasul La'edus. And that's the way most of the Rishonim explain that the Chazan HaKnesses, that the one in charge of the shul, the gabbai, will get up every day and humiliate this person for the terrible thing that they did, which was totally dishonest. So that's the discussion, the Rishonim, exactly how far do we take this. Now, what the Gemara does not really clearly define is, under which circumstances does this apply? Every time somebody's looking into a house, and now I come and I outbid them, so now we say that I have the right to be called a Rasha, or perhaps according to some Rishonim, I have to give the money back. Is that really true? Is that what it means? So the Rishonim have a very important fundamental machlokas. Under which conditions does this halacha apply? So Rashi writes that this applies either by a chefetz hanikne, either by somebody walks into a store, they're negotiating a price, or as we would generally know it, somebody sees a house and they're negotiating a price and they're already far along the negotiations. Rashi says it doesn't make sense for somebody to come along now and to outbid his friend or to get involved or to meddle into the discussion. Rashi says that would be someone who would violate this prohibition of Ani Amahapech Becharara. Rashi writes, not only does it apply in a business deal, it applies also to a chefetz shel hefker, which means, you see a $100 bill on the floor, you see somebody is eyeing it, someone's about to take it, they're just too embarrassed to take it in front of everyone else, so they're waiting a minute or two till everyone passes, but it's clear that they want to take it. Now, you come quickly right underneath them and you grab it, even though you knew with certainty that they were going to take it, and you know it doesn't belong to them, it's something that was just hefker, it's something that they're just waiting till everybody passes by until they can take it. Rashi says that is also a prohibition of Ani Amahapech Becharara. Once somebody shows intent that they want to have a relationship with this item, with this money, with this chefetz, you don't have a right to come underneath them and to take it away from them. And the Bali Atosas disagree, and they say it is not at all to be translated into every circumstance when somebody wants to have a relationship with an item. The Bali Atosas say the answer is this only applies in business. When you have somebody who's very heavily involved in a business deal, and they're already in contract, and now you go and you take it away from them, that's where we're going to limit it and say you are not allowed to take it away. However, if you have something like a mitzia, Rabbeinu Tam says, what it means is, you have something which buy a business deal, why do I say it's not right to take it away from someone else? Because why are you taking it away from him? You can just as easily go somewhere else and do a deal in a different way, with a different company, with a different real estate agent, on a different house. So why do you have to get involved here? Go to somewhere else. But where we're dealing with a mitzia, says Rabbeinu Tam, when you're dealing with a $100 bill in the middle of the street, you can't tell me, don't take it away from him, you can get it somewhere else. How often is there a $100 bill in the middle of the street? So Rabbeinu Tam says, first come, first serve. Whoever gets it is the one who has the right to take it. And even though I see that you're eyeing it, even though I see that you want it, and you have very specific intent to take the item, it doesn't become yours until it's in your hands. So obviously I don't have a right to take it away from you to steal it once it's in your hands. But before it gets to your hands, even though I see that you're eyeing it and that you clearly want it, I have a right to come by a mitzia, says Rabbeinu Tam, because this is something that you will not find anywhere else. It's something that's very unusual. Yes, every once in 5 years you might see a $100 bill in the street, but that's unreasonable to assume that. Tell the person, oh, don't take it because someone else wants it, and you'll very easily get it somewhere else. This is a very important disagreement in the Rishonim, exactly how to define the parameters of this prohibition. So the Balei HaTosfos asks a question. If in fact this is the case, that when we're talking about a chefetz shel hefker, when we're talking about the $100 bill in the middle of the street, and somebody else clearly shows intent that they want to pick it up and you quickly go and take it instead of them, ask the Balei HaTosfos, if that's the case, that there's nothing wrong with taking it there, how do we understand the Gemara in Baba Basra? The Gemara says that when you have a bunch of fishermen, so each one comes with his net, and my understanding is that I put out the net here. I don't want anyone else to come and put a net right on top of mine, because otherwise they're going to take all the fish. So the Gemara says there's a communal understanding. If someone else puts a net here, there's a certain amount of distance that you have to give until you put out your net. Otherwise, how's this going to work? How are we ever going to catch fish if somebody else is always going to come right away, take the fish away from us? So the Balei HaTosfos asks, what do you mean? Who owns the fish right now? No one. They're hefker. It's like the $100 bill in the middle of the street. So if no one owns the fish, how can you tell me I'm not allowed to come with a net and take the fish that are right next to your net? What ownership do you have over the fish at this point in time? No ownership at all. What relationship do you have with the things that are swimming around in the ocean? Nothing at all. So ask the Balei HaTosfos, how can you tell me that there's a problem to stick out a fishing net and to catch the fish that you had intent to catch if, after all, both of us are on equal playing field? So Balei HaTosfos give three answers. One of them is a very important one, where they write, since this is parnasaso v'umenaso, since you're a fisherman, you're not just doing this as a hobby, you do it because this is how you sustain your family, this is how you take care of yourself, therefore in that case we say, aser leire letochum naso shel chaver, you're not allowed to go and encroach on somebody else's business. What's he going to do? If this is the way he makes a living, and now you're going to come and take the business away from him, so that's something that's inappropriate. But if we're dealing with people who are just leisurely going out to go fishing, and now you're just going to annoy him because every time he puts out a fishing net, you also put out a fishing net. So in a case like that, we assume there would be no prohibition as Tosfos understands it. So this, again, is a very important machlokas. As we said, for those who just came in, we have a disagreement between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Where does this prohibition of Aniya Mahapech Becharara actually apply? Rashi says it applies anytime somebody lays their eyes on a valuable item or on something that they have intent to acquire or somehow to put into their ownership, and now you come underneath them and you somehow make sure that it becomes yours instead of theirs, Rashi says you have violated the prohibition of Ani HaMahapech B'Charara. And the Balei HaTosfos disagree and they say, no, that's only in a regular business deal, because you have every right to say, what are you getting involved in my dealings here with someone else? Go buy a house somewhere else. Go be involved in a different real estate. Go get a different item. What are you making a problem for me? However, when we're talking about a chefet shel hefker, when we're talking about something which is, you find a $100 bill in the street, the Balei HaTosfos say you cannot extract and say that in that case, we would say the person is a rusher for taking the $100 bill. After all, there is no way to tell the person, go somewhere else and find your own $100 bill. It's just not going to happen. So, how do we paskin the halacha is a very important question, because this makes a major difference. And we get asked the question every so often. Just a few weeks ago, somebody locally asked me the question, is there a prohibition? My neighbor has a babysitter that is an amazing babysitter. I watch the way she watches the kids in the park, and I see how she plays with them. I see how she's never on her cell phone, and she really pays attention to them. And now I want to take away the babysitter from my neighbor. So is that something that is permissible? Meaning what? I'll go to the babysitter and say, I'll offer you $20 an hour if you come work for me. My neighbor's only offering $10 an hour, so I'm really doing something that's unethical. It's not really right. So he said, Rabbi, I know it's not the right thing to do, but now I'm talking halacha lemaisa. Is it something that I'm allowed to do, or is it something that I'm not allowed to do? It's a very important question. Well, it depends. Do you paskin like Rashi, or do you paskin like Rabbeinu Tam? What are we dealing with here? and how much of a hot item is a babysitter considered? I'll tell you the truth. I think it's very hard to find a babysitter that you can actually trust, that's very easy to keep in your house, and that you really want your children to be with. It's not so easy. And once you find one that you're comfortable with, you hope they stay for a long time, and you hope your children are comfortable, and you hope everything works out well. Now somebody else is going to come and take them away. How do we categorize that? Can you tell me, when I try to poach your babysitter, can you tell me, what do you mean? Ani ha-ma'apech b'charara. It's like I'm standing over the $100 bill in the street. I have the coveted item. I have something that everybody wants. And now people are going to take it away from me? That's unethical. That's not right. And not only unethical, it's what the Gemara says. You don't have a right to do it because it's ani ha-ma'apech b'charara. Or do you say, no, maybe like Rabbeinu Tam, this is like a metzia. Having a babysitter is like something, you'll never find another one like this. It's like finding a $100 bill in the middle of the street, where Rabbeinu Tam argues in such a case, somebody else does have the right to take it, even though they watch you eyeing that item, because after all, you can't tell them, go down the block and find the $100 bill somewhere else. So this is a very relevant question. It's a very relevant question. It's a difficult question to answer, and it comes up every so often. I see I don't have enough time to get to the point of why I'm talking about it this week, but we'll see in a minute. The Sfrida Eish, Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, has a beautiful set of tshuvas where he writes a story about the city Königsberg. I don't know much about the city, but he says that there were two communities in this one very small shtetl, and he says, two shuls decided, why are we spending so much money running two shuls? You don't have enough money to pay your bills, we don't have enough money to pay our bills, why don't we merge together, and we'll close down one of the shuls, and we'll all come together, we'll figure out how we're going to divvy up all the aliyos, and how we're going to divvy up everything in the shul, and who's going to be the gabbai. But the main problem is, each shul had a chazan that they were paying. So this shul says, we want our chazan to keep on the job, and that one says, we want our chazan to keep on the job. So the Sfrida Eish was asked, who has the right of way? So naturally, he says, as they were making the agreement with each other about how this merge is going to work, so naturally they said to each other, look, one chazan just knows how to sing. The other chazan knows not only how to sing, but he's also a shochet, and he also knows how to do all kinds of other things outside of the chazanas. He knows how to be the bal korei. So naturally it makes sense. If we're going to have to get rid of one, we should get rid of the one who is not as talented as the second one. This way, we'll be able to have a person on staff that's going to be able to do lots of different things. So what did he do? While this merger was being worked out, the second chazan, who didn't know anything outside of chazanas, decided to take a course in shechita, and he quickly teaches himself how to be a shochet, and he teaches himself how to do all the other things that the other chazan knows how to do. And now he says, what do you mean? Now we're equal. Why should he choose him over me? Now we both have equal qualities, equal qualifications. Maybe he should take me over him because now I'm just as good as he is. So this was a question that was presented to the Sfrida Eish, and they asked him, is that considered a violation of ani ha-ma'apech b'charara? This one was clearly eyeing the job because, after all, he had the qualification. And his friend, he knew, didn't have any of those qualifications. On the other hand, maybe you can say, what do you mean? Until the job is given to you, until you sign the contract, it's not yours. So you have a rabbi who's going to look for a job, and now somebody finds out that there's an open position, and he quickly puts his hat in the race, and he quickly says, oh, I want the job. And now the shul sees, oh, you're more qualified than him, or he's more qualified than you. And the question is, how do we deal with that? Is that a violation of ani ha-ma'apech b'charara or not? And especially given what we said before, that Tosis writes, whenever it's yorid le'umnasu shel chavero, if you're taking away the job of another person, maybe there's another factor that we have to keep in mind here. So the question we'll deal with in the last 2 minutes is something that Rav Moshe Feinstein discusses. So Rav Moshe says, what about when you have a couple who's dating, and one of the friends of the guy who's going out with this girl says, hey, you know, I met them the other night on a date, and I really want to marry this girl, and I'm pretty uncomfortable about the fact that my friend is going out with the girl. I want to be the one to marry her. The problem is, if I'm not going to intervene, he's going to end up getting married to her. I'm going to lose my chance. I wanted to go out with this girl for the longest time, and he tries to figure out a way how he can poach the girl away from this guy and figure out how he's going to be the one to marry her. So Rav Moshe discusses the issue, and he says, maybe this is also touching on this issue of ani ha-ma'apech b'charara. After all, on the one hand, he says, Rashi says, as we said, Rashi mentions that ani ha-ma'apech b'charara applies anytime you want to have a relationship with an item or with a person or with anything. So maybe this should apply here as well. On the other hand, he says, we really paskim ikar adin like Rabbeinu Tam, that when we have a metzia, when you have a $100 bill in the middle of the street and I see someone eyeing it, it doesn't belong to them till it's in their hands. And even though I see they're eyeing it, and I see they want to take it, and they have every intent for it to be theirs, I'm allowed to come quickly and swoop it away from right underneath them. Right? So Moshe, is there any mitzvah greater than this? If you don't marry the girl, someone else is going to marry her. That's much more important than a $100 bill in the middle of the street. And therefore he writes, as far as ani ha-ma'apech b'charara is concerned, even while they're dating, and even when you see they have intent to get engaged, he says, al pi halacha, you certainly have a right to get involved and to do whatever you can to, again, it's a very strange thing to do, to start breaking up shidduchim because you think that you're more worthy of marrying this girl than the other person, but he says basic, strict halacha would dictate that you have a right to do so. Rav Moshe then throws in a very interesting caveat where he says, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Moed Katan that you're allowed to get engaged on Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara asks, I ema arvin simcha b'simcha. You're not allowed to get married on Chol HaMoed, so why are you allowed to get engaged? So the Gemara says, well, if you don't get engaged, the problem is shema yikadmenu acher berachamim. Maybe if you don't get engaged when you're supposed to, someone else is going to have a lot of kavan and shemana esrei, and God is going to actually give them the shidduch instead of you. So you better do it as quickly as you can to make sure you solidify the deal. You make sure that the girl is going to be committed to you and not run off to someone else because of a tefillah that someone else offers. Well, says Rav Moshe, how would God answer somebody's tefillah if they're doing the wrong thing? Right? If you're not allowed to do that, if you see you have a friend who's about to get engaged, and the Gemara says you have to be concerned, make sure you get engaged, don't delay, because maybe the other person is going to offer a tefillah and God's going to answer the tefillah and let them have the girl or let them have the guy. Says Rav Moshe, how could the Ribbono Shel Olam accept a tefillah from someone who's asking that the other shidduch should break off in order that I should be able to have this girl in my life? Does that make sense? How can the Ribbono Shel Olam answer such a tefillah? And it must be, he says, you see from the Gemara, that there's nothing wrong with it. It must be that it's permissible, because otherwise how can such a tefillah be accepted? Then says Rav Moshe, not so convincing. And this I find to be an unbelievable chiddush. Rav Moshe says, there are times when the Ribbono Shel Olam will be mekabel a tefillah, af sha'am mevakesh davar shelo ha'yarai levakesh. Even when I'm asking for something that I'm not deserving of, or I'm asking for something that I shouldn't have, sometimes the Ribbono Shel Olam will give it to me, which is an amazing concept. I don't know exactly what to do with it, but Rav Moshe says in this tshuva, he says, you cannot bring a proof from that Gemara where the Gemara says, make sure you get engaged as quickly as possible because maybe someone else is going to daven that they should have the shidduch instead of you, and you have to be concerned, writes Rav Moshe. How can the Ribbono Shel Olam accept a tefillah of someone who's asking for something wrong, who's asking that you break up a shidduch in order that I should end up with the girl or the guy? It doesn't make sense, says Rav Moshe. Yes, it does make sense. Because every so often, you don't know the cheshbon and shamayim. You don't know exactly how it works. And perhaps, he writes, it's possible this person has some schus somewhere and the Ribbono Shel Olam will accept the tefillah even though they're asking for something which is highly inappropriate. I found that to be an unbelievable chiddush of Rav Moshe. And it's a chiddush that I think has consequences in other areas of tefillah as well. What does it mean? Sometimes we might ask for something, even though we're asking for something that might not be the right thing. What does it mean that the Ribbono Shel Olam sometimes can accept that tefillah, even though it's not something that we're worthy of really having or really deserving? I'm not sure exactly how to interpret Rav Moshe's words, but it's something that caught my attention and I found was extremely fascinating. Rav Chanan.